Welcome to another episode of The Short Code, a podcast of wit and wisdom from the students at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. I'm Dave Etler. Match day. It's often said here in the Carver College of Medicine that in the minds of most students, it's more important than graduation. If you don't know what match day is yet, it's the day when all the fourth-year med students find out where in the country they will go after graduation to continue their training as resident physicians, and it's kind of a big deal. With us today to talk about the process and what it's like are Damien Ehrig, the Carver College of Medicine's registrar, and fourth-year students Michael and Jacqueline Hogsdahl, right?
Correct.
Did I do that all right? And Natalie Ramirez, of course, has nothing better to do, so she always joins us
for the
podcast. Welcome, everybody. Damien, I want to start off with you. Give us some idea of how Match works.
Sure. So Match process actually starts in June for us of the final year for the students. We prepare the ARIS tokens. ARIS is the Electronic Resident Application Service. And then on July 1st, they're able to go in and sign into what's called MyARIS. And that's the student portion of the ARIS system. So the students are able to go in at that time and begin to create their application and create their personal statement to get that uploaded at that time, and then also to start looking at the variety of programs that are out there and the ones they might want to apply to. Starting on September 15th, that's when programs start to receive the applications and personal statements, transcripts, et cetera, from the ARIS application system. And shortly after that, they start to offer interviews. On October 1st, that is the national release date for the MSP, or the Medical Student Performance Evaluation. And this is a summative document of the student's time at the school. Interviews actually start happening sometime in October all the way through January then. Rank order lists are due from the students and the programs about the third-ish week in February. Programs and students have to submit their rank order list. Programs are ranking their students, the ones they have interviewed. And then the students are ranking their programs. If the students are a couple, which we have a couple here today, they can talk about that in more detail, gets even more complicated because they're trying to arrange their lists in such a way that for each of the individual student, they're trying to find something that fits for them, but then also as a couple, they're trying to find a place or an area that works for both of them. A month later, all the rank lists have gone in, and the NRMP, the National Resident Matching Program, they run their mysterious algorithm.
And For a whole month.
I'm pretty sure, we discussed this before, I'm pretty sure it's just a guy in a room with like a Linux box or something, and he just he pushes a button and spits out.
And then he laughs for the next
that's right. And then
28
for 3 weeks.
Days.
Yes. He's chuckling to himself. I get paid for this, yeah. On the Monday of match week, students find out if they match. So not where they match, but if. And if they match, then they are set for Friday, which is match day. And if they didn't match, then we go through the process known as the Supplemental Offer and Acceptance Program. It is a chance for U.S. medical graduates who have not matched up to that point to try and secure a match. It's better to match to the main match than to try and take your chances through the SOAP process. And then match day rolls around. That's a wonderful day. We celebrate everyone and their matches.
It sounds awful.
Yeah, match day, I feel like it's like as a future psychiatrist, sort of a nice ground for discovering who actually has a panic disorder or not.
I spoke with Nancy Rosenthal about the couples match, and this is what she had to say.
Nancy, how do you think match has changed over the years?
Well, I didn't go through the match. I was a part of a couple, and at that point, and actually was the last year, couples could go outside the match and make deals, so I knew in mid-November where I was going, and then eventually they made the couples match, but on match day, I was far away and wasn't involved in it at all. But that didn't exist back then. There weren't as many women in medicine. There was probably only about 20, 25 women in my class.
So obviously that's changed to a large extent. What do we have? Close to half and half, if not half and half, right?
I think this class is actually one that tipped it over more females than males when they entered, at least.
Correct, yeah. So this class, we had a few more females than males, but from this point on, our female numbers start to go down. So I think our last entering class, they were right around 40% or so.
So with couples match, that's even worse, right, in some ways?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't what we went through, I guess, isn't at all what Dean Rosenthal mentioned. It's changed, I guess, since then. But and actually, we didn't even do the traditional couples match. But traditionally, what the couples match looks like is, you know, a couple can get together and put together a rank list that kind of looks at both persons' preferences. So instead of, you know, one person having a column of one through however many places they want to rank, there's a column for each person. And then, so your first choice might be, you know, in our case, Michael, Iowa, Jackie, Iowa. Second choice together could be Michael, Iowa, Jackie, Seattle, if she didn't like me as much as I hope she does. But
did you share rank order lists? Or did you?
No.
You kept them
put in. I mean, so I think it does give a good opportunity for people to try and secure a place together, but it's also a little bit more stressful and complicated. Yeah. Do you want to tell them how you complicated our situation a little bit?
Well, so I made our situation a little bit more difficult because I decided to choose a specialty in ophthalmology. And so that was an early match, as Damian had mentioned earlier.
It's a competitive specialty.
It's a competitive specialty. And then, yeah, the timing is just different. And it's a whole different application process. So I actually had to do the SF match application and an ARIS application. But I, so because it's an early match, I knew first where I was going in January. And then we had to work to hopefully get Michael to match here as well. But throughout the interview process, we were just very open to the programs and asked them if they'd be willing to work with us, and, you know, just made them aware of our situation. And everyone was very welcoming and offered assistance if that situation had arisen. Mm-hmm. So it didn't turn out to be as bad as we thought it would, but it is a very stressful a situation when one person has matched and know that where they're going to be, but you don't have any idea where the other person has. But from my perspective, and this might be wrong, but I feel like the traditional couples match may be a little less stressful because, you know, you have your rank list together and they're submitted together. But maybe that's not the case. I don't know. But it is stressful nonetheless.
You also have a child, do you not?
No, we don't.
No. Again, that will be cut out.
We have by proxy through our friend Kristen, who's also a med student.
Well, speaking of which, here is her advice on dealing with the match.
At some point, it's out of your control, so you just need to take it easy for the day.
And is that the biggest load of garbage that you've ever said before? Because I know that almost everybody, every M4 I came into contact with, has been like on the edge of their seats.
So what you need to do is have a baby a month before match day, and then you realize that you just don't have time to think about where you're matching.
Now we're getting the real advice.
Yep. So you have stress at home and you're not sleeping, so it makes the actual match part not that big of a deal.
Brilliant advice.
Great advice.
Think of all the babies we'll have next year after they listen.
That's great. We're gonna that'll be standard college medicine advice now.
I heard one fellow student who was saying that prior to match day, they were trying to sleep as much as possible because the moments they were awake were the most stressful. And so if they slept more, then they were less worrisome. So
wine consumption in my house would go way up.
The Carver College of Medicine on no way advocates drinking alcohol.
See, this is what happens. This is what happens when you invite officials onto the show.
Whatever. I gave up booze for Lent, all right, which happened to fall over match day. Did not think that through.
Well, yes. I have more advice from various people. Let's listen to some more advice.
I think if there's a place you're really interested in going in advance, you should do an away elective there and get to know the culture.
Sounds like good advice, right? I mean, is it this may not always be available to people to do that because electives are precious.
Correct. Yeah. About, I would say, 50% or so of our students end up doing an away somewhere.
Well, that's not too bad, so but you can't go to every place.
Well, no, that's just it. I mean, your rank order list, let's say it has 10 places on there. I mean, you're only going to be able to visit, you know, one, maybe two out of your entire schedule. So, you know, while, as Dean Cooper says in our class meeting, there are some advantages to doing an away elective, there's also some disadvantages, and you have to weigh those and make a choice what's going to fit better for your schedule.
Right. Here's another bit of advice.
I went on too many interviews.
How many? Roughly. System of calculus to determine the number of interviews?
Kind of. I interviewed for two different things because I had to do an intern year and ophthalmology. So I did 14 ophthalmology interviews, or 15 ophthalmology interviews and 9 interviews for the first year, intern year. So, in the 20s.
I only did 7 interviews, so, but I'm going into psych, so it's not, I also didn't have to interview for.
And they'll take anybody.
So they'll take anyone. So it's not the same thing.
No offense, Natalie. I'm sure that you were chosen because you were brilliant. God, I've just insulted Natalie.
Never again for this show.
So, number of interviews. Obviously, what did you guys do?
I think me and Michael probably both agree that we probably went on too many, and we actually didn't go on very many. I did only 8 ophthalmology interviews and 3 intern year interviews, and I feel like that was too many because we were pretty sure, I think, we wanted to stay here. We really like it here, and so we felt like that was a lot, but you got to almost do them just to, you know, get a good idea of the different places and what makes one place better than another.
Well, how are you even going to rank a place where you didn't go? I mean, you could have
right.
just...
You, right, you can't. So in order to come up with a rank list, you have to interview at them.
How many did you do, Mike?
I think I did 10, and all of them overlapped with cities that had ophthalmology programs or institutions, except I went to Chicago as my first interview, which... I guess was good because I kind of got the hang of it. And
I was going to say that's
didn't end up wanting to go there.
No offense to Chicago, but that's like the throwaway right. interview where you yeah. learn. All right.
But that was good. But it was exhausting.
Yeah.
I think it was fun at times, but you know.
And this takes place over how long?
I think I started end of October and I finished third week of December.
Is that pretty mm-hmm. pretty typical?
Again, it's specially dependent, but that's pretty standard.
Okay.
The main time is going to be during that
sure.
That last part of the year there.
What did you? How many did you
yeah.
do?
So I did 7, and I think that I ended up choosing those 7 kind of in a data-oriented way. I looked at the match data statistics, so they put out a thing every year. And so I looked at psychiatry, and it said that basically if you were applying to psychiatry and you completed 8 interviews and ranked 8 programs, then you would definitely match. There's like no way you wouldn't match. And so I figured, okay, I'm going to live on the edge, do 7, and see how that works out. And it was just fine. I mean, I think it is really specialty dependent. Psychiatry is one of the least competitive fields, mostly because, I don't know, people don't like doing it, I suppose. But... In the end, I was very happy having done those 7 and could have done more, but I feel like it would have been kind of a waste of money and time and maybe taking away opportunities for others in some spots where I knew I really didn't want to go.
Here's a little insider interview. In insider information we got from somebody who shall remain nameless.
Never trust a word from any program.
What do you mean?
I mean that programs just are going to tell you, of course, that they liked you and they loved you and they thought you were a great fit and all these things and blah, 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 blah. And
do you ask them or were you like, hey, so how'd I do?
Oh, no. They actually send you emails. They'll just, like, do it. And it's in their best interest to have you rank them as highly as possible. And so I get why they do it. But I think that in the end, you have to act in your own self-interest and kind of ignore that stuff. It's not necessarily BS, but it's, you know, at the end of the day, they interview, you know, usually 10 times the number of people for the number of spots available at their school. And they really don't want to not match. And they want their people who they really want. And so... I think that they're not being necessarily insincere, but they also don't know how it's going to work out. So you just got to put down what's good for you.
Okay, so they're liars. All right.
You're the one who called it light.
Well, that wasn't me. Damien, this, I know this comes up at the class meeting. I know you say this, this bit of advice, that, you know, what the programs are going to tell you, you know, might technically be true, but it's probably tempting for students to go, oh, thank God they love me. I'm going to match there. I don't have to do anything more. I can rank them and nobody else, for instance.
Yeah, so, you know, we hear a lot from our students that a program will tell them, you know, they love them and they're going to rank them highly. Well, ranking highly is a bit ambiguous.
Yeah, that doesn't mean number one. Like a shoe in there. But
I mean, it doesn't mean number one. Let's say they had, you know, 70 interviews and they're going to rank 10 students and maybe they will rank you. So you are ranked highly, but you're still, say, number 10 on their list. So again, that, you know, everyone is working a bit from their own self-interest. But our general advice is, you know, go with... make your list according to what you think fits for you. So if you think a particular place is number one, don't worry about what they're going to, you know, what you're hearing back from them. You need to do what you need to do. So make your list according to how you think you'll fit in. And if that's your number one choice, that's your number one choice.
Is it a good idea to try to game the system to try to figure out the best way to do things?
No.
Just doesn't work.
It doesn't work. What happens is you end up potentially not matching, and you don't want to do that.
Good advice. I have no idea what this is going to say right now.
It was really fun doing the interviews. I think going through this whole process has been pretty enlightening. It takes a lot of self-reflection. You figure out what your priorities are, what you really want, and it was kind of a great experience for that. And then today, I feel like the chips just sort of fall where they are, and most people are end up really happy no matter where they go. And, you know, Dallas was a very good choice for me, and I'm happy that I ended up matching there with some good friends. I think that it all kind of works out how it's supposed to.
There are people who don't get their first choice, obviously. I mean, everybody can get their first choice.
Yeah, but just that first day, I felt like I was so grateful to have matched. I was like, you know what? Wherever I ranked, whatever, I'm happy. And it kind of put things in perspective, that little bit of a feeling there. And then on match day, somehow people do forget how happy they were just to have matched. And they end up matching at their, you know, third, fourth, fifth spot or whatever. But in the end, if it's in the field that you want to go to, then that was the goal. And I think that we, you know, eventually remember that and become very grateful to just, you know, to keep, you know, living this dream.
And, you know, there's always the reverse. Sometimes I hear from people who, and maybe you've heard more, from people who did match in their first or second choice, and then it turned out that it wasn't as good as the experience wasn't as good as they thought it was going to be. So, you know, maybe the point is not to stress out so much about it. As you say, you've got your match.
I feel like those top spots too, if you end up liking them all, it's kind of hard, one or the other.
Well, here's another thing I've heard is that sometimes these programs that are really prestigious may not be the best fit for you. I mean, it might sound good on paper, but you know, going to some prestigious residency program where they do a lot of amazing things may not be culturally the right place for you to be. I mean, sometimes maybe these programs offer medical students residents a lot of pressure, an environment that's not as friendly or helpful or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's always something to consider too, is the culture of the program that you're.
Yeah. And in the end, you want to be at a place that really wants you. You know, so I think that was kind of one of the happiest things about Dallas for me, is that I know I'd spoken with the program director before submitting my rank list, and I thought he's a great guy, really sincere person, and he told me that he thought, you know, very highly of me as well. And so now I can go to a place feeling like, oh, that was a good fit. You know, we both matched. It was kind of like doing a little dance and finding, you know, a couple, probably just like Jackie and Michael's wedding or something.
Oh, yeah.
You guys did use an algorithm for that, right?
Yes.
That's disturbing. Right?
So one thing I was going to ask Damien about, I think I saw news reports or maybe in the papers or something. It was kind of a record year as far as people that didn't match into programs at like 1,100 versus 850 last year. What's setting up that environment? do you think?
Sure. So it's a couple of things. One, there are many, many more students from all over that are applying for the match. So this includes DO students as well as U.S. students that are going to foreign medical schools, and then also international, non-U.S. citizen international medical school graduates. So those numbers all are going up. So on top of that, then we also have more U.S. seniors because we have a combination of more medical schools coming online and their first graduating classes were this year. And then also there, along with that effort, was an effort to increase class sizes across medical schools. So suddenly you have this combination of more U.S. seniors as well as just more students in general from all over the place shooting for a limited number of positions. Residency positions that really, they don't add a lot to those positions every year. There were a few more added this year based off of the NRMP's all-in policy, where if a program offered one position, they had to offer all of their positions. So that did bump up, say, you know, in internal medicine, there were about 1,000 more positions there. But that, you know, that increase doesn't match the increase in the number of students. So you have this highly competitive situation with many more people shooting for a limited resource. It's still, being a U.S. medical graduate is still your best chance of matching during the match process by far. But it is creating a situation where we're finding more unmatched students, and then they have to go through the supplemental offer and acceptance program, the SOAP, which it has created a bit of a structure there that wasn't necessarily there before with the scramble, which is what we used to call it. It has also created a situation where programs, because students are reapplying to programs, programs are basically just looking at students on paper. And so it really benefits those students that were already relatively strong in that group. And so students that are weaker on paper, that before, during the scramble, we would have been able to say, you know, call up somebody that the dean knows or faculty knows, DEO knows, and just say, look, you know, I think you should take a chance on this student. I know on paper they don't look the best, but here are the reasons why I think they would be a good fit for your program. We can't do that anymore.
That's gone. Yeah.
And so students that we in the past maybe we would have seen match through that scramble process, now we're not seeing matching through the SOAP process. So it's for us in student affairs, I mean, it's very troublesome, but we also aren't in charge of trying to get more of those residency positions available out there for our students. And we certainly voice our opinion when it comes to the SOAP and how that should operate to the best advantage for our students. Once SOAP is over, it's a free-for-all. For the very few positions that are left, anybody can shoot for those positions.
So now you're competing with the international medical graduates.
Yep, it's the whole, group involved. Of anybody who wasn't matched and still seeking a position. If those programs are still taking applications after SOAP, yep, they're all shooting for those positions.
Like, how did I free agency?
Yes, yeah. Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah.
How did Iowa do?
Historically, Iowa does very well, and we did very well again this year. There's always a percentage of students every year that choose not to match for whatever reason. So
they're delaying residency.
Delaying residency for any number of reasons, and that also includes some students that perhaps didn't match to a first-year position.
And some of these people delaying residency, they're maybe doing a research position. I mean,
it could be.
What are the reasons people delay?
Well, I mean, it could be personal. It could be, you know, health related. It could be they're seeking another degree. You know, they decided they really wanted a public health degree later on in their time here. So, I mean, it could be any number of things. So they've decided, you know, they just need a little bit of extra time here to finish out whatever they're trying to do.
Here's a guy who did that. Okay. That very thing.
So we're here with Asita Jayawardena, who is at M3. He's not matching this year.
Yep.
But does being here with these people, does it mean anything at all to you?
It means, so my original class was these guys. So this M4 class is the class that I identify with. I'm a dual degree student, so I took my first couple years with them, and then I took a year to do the MPH. So I'm so proud of my class, and it's just such an exciting day and like feeling to be here. But I am ridiculously jealous that every one of my colleagues now knows what they're going to do with their life, and I have no idea. Yeah, I'm definitely going to be asking them for advice, so.
Natalie, you were about to say something.
Nothing substantial. I was just going to say that maybe some of us, Dave, are considering a career in radio, television, and film, and that would be a proper reason to delay our
Oh, sentence. Well, I would... It seems like a lot of money to spend to go to medical school to basically be a podcaster. I don't know.
You and me, Dave. We're going to make it.
I think our financial services people would probably advocate that you not do that.
Yeah. Somehow combine it with medicine, okay? Well, I want to thank you guys all for coming in today. We've been talking today with Registrar Damien Ehrig and seniors Michael Hogsdell, Jacqueline Hogsdell, and Natalie Ramirez. Thank you guys for coming in. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for listening to The Short Coat. The Short Coat is produced by the Writing and Humanities Program at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine with support from medical student government. You can visit us online at theshortcoat.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, too, where we post not only our episodes, but news and info for medical students. I recommend that you check it out because I spend a fair amount of time doing that, and, you know, it'd be nice if people looked at it. That'd be awesome. We also take comments and story ideas and the occasional rant from you, our listeners, by email at theshortcoats@gmail.com or leave us a message at 347-SHORT-CT. That's 347-746-7828. The executive producers are Jason T. Lewis and David T. Etler. Our opening music is by Dude Skywalker. I love that. Dude Skywalker. And our closing music is by Revolution Void.